BBC News at 2 o'clock. This is Victoria Bourne. The Prime Minister is to announce plans to speed up major building projects in an attempt to help the economy's recovery. In a speech on Tuesday, he'll announce the creation of a task force to accelerate pledges to create more hospitals, roads and prisons. Our political correspondent Jessica Parker explains why.
What the government's trying to push back on is perhaps what people might expect, that because of coronavirus, that all those plans the Prime Minister talked about, that maybe those plans are going to be pushed back, scaled down. I think what Boris Johnson's trying to say is, no, actually, we're going to do them even faster. But there's inevitably going to be questions. How viable is that, given the state of the economy might be in as we emerge from coronavirus? Mm-hmm. Of course, the full state of it isn't really yet clear. How much is it going to cost? And how is it going to be paid for?
A 25-year-old man has been charged with murdering three men who were stabbed to death at a park in Reading. Kairi Sadullah also faces charges of attempted murder. Police have named the man suspected of stabbing six people in Glasgow on Friday as Bedreddin Abdullah Adam, a 28-year-old asylum seeker from Sudan. He was shot dead by armed officers following the attack at a hotel. The United States has recorded more than 2.5 million cases of coronavirus, with record numbers of infections in the South and West. Several states, including Florida and Texas, which are among the first to reopen, are now putting back restrictions. Matthew Bullitt, who runs a bar in Florida, spoke of his frustration.
We did everything. Our staff were wearing masks. We had sanitizing stations. We did weekly tests. We limited occupancy. We did everything that was asked. It's a tough conversation to have with everybody that, we won't be able to provide them with a place to work and, and money.
The business group, the CBI, says that UK firms have hit what it calls rock bottom because of the lockdown. It's questioned more than 900 companies. John McManus reports.
The research appears to show that private sector activity fell at its fastest pace on record in the 3 months to July, with consumer services hit especially hard. Manufacturing output also declined heavily. The organisation says that businesses are worried about being able to fully reopen following the lockdown. Their chief concerns are a lack of demand, staff absences because of school closures and transport difficulties. The CBI has called for more government support, including a further deferral of VAT payments.
Police have used extra powers to disperse crowds from two unlicensed music events in South London. They said the events at Clapham Common and Tooting Bec were causing significant disruption. The Rolling Stones have said that Donald Trump could face legal action if he continues to use their songs at his campaign rallies. The band's working with the performing rights organisation, the BMI, to stop the unauthorised use of their music. BBC News.
A candy-coloured clown they call the Sandman tiptoes to my room every night, just to sprinkle stardust and to whisper, go to sleep, everything is all right. I close my eyes, then I drift.
My Welcome to The First Time with me, Matt Everett. This is the series where we meet some of the most influential and best-loved musicians around and look at the seminal first musical moments that shaped their lives and their careers, their first musical passions, their first gig, their first hit, and so on. I'm speaking not to a musician, but to a filmmaker and one who uses music to unique effect and is a musician himself, David Lynch. And that song that you just heard was Roy Orbison's In Dreams, taken from Lynch's breakthrough film Blue Velvet. And whether it's his creations on film or TV, such as Blue Velvet or Twin Peaks, Lost Highway, Eraserhead or Wild at Heart, or in his own music, there's a certain feel to David Lynch's work. Surreal, hypnotic, disturbingly beautiful. Sometimes this idea of something just in wait, lying under the surface, just on the borders of consciousness, and sometimes just images and sounds straight from a nightmare. In this very rare interview, he talks about his formative early musical influences, his passion for early rock and roll, and Elvis, obviously, how music has inspired his movies, very specifically in the case of something like Blue Velvet, and how he creates his own solo albums, like this year's release, The Big Dream. But I started, as I do with all my guests, by asking when he was first aware of music.
My parents played a lot of music in the house, but they played mostly classical music. And I remember it wafting around.
What sort of thing?
Mahler and, let's see, Chopin, things like that.
And did you always find music attractive, appealing, the idea of sound being around you?
Yes, I liked sounds as much as music. And one of the sounds I loved as a kid was the sound of a squadron of B-36 bombers. It was so beautiful. My parents used to sing in the car, and so you imagine driving across the United States, your parents singing in the front seat, and it would drive me crazy.
I'm just trying to conjure up an image of you sitting in the back of a car on a long road trip.
My dad is a cowboy and a woodsman, and so a lot of Western songs. That's another thing. It wasn't all classical. It was a lot of Western music. I can't remember the things. Campfire songs. You know, My Darling Clementine, I think, was one of them.
Oh, my darling.
Oh, my darling. Oh, my darling Clementine. You are lost and gone forever. Dreadful, sorry Clementine. In a cavern. The sons of guns, I'm here to say, have left me dead broke today. In gambling halls delaying, 10,000 cattle straying. In gambling halls delaying, 10,000 cattle straying. Oh, my darling, oh, my darling.
What was the first music that you owned? What was the first kind of record that was yours?
I got Peggy Sue by Buddy Holly.
Okay, that's a good record. That's a good start.
It's a great record.
If you knew Peggy Sue, then you know why I feel blue without Peggy. My Peggy Sue. Oh, well, I love you, girlies. I love you, Peggy Sue. Peggy Sue, Peggy Sue. Oh, how my heart yearns for you, oh, Peggy. Peggy Sue. Oh, well, I love you, girlies. I love you, Peggy Sue. Peggy Sue, Peggy Sue. Pretty, 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 pretty Peggy Sue. Oh, oh, Peggy. My Peggy Sue. Oh, well, I love you, gal, and I need you, Peggy Sue. I want you, Peggy Sue. I need you, Peggy Sue. I love you, Peggy Sue. With a love so rare and true. Oh, Peggy. My Peggy Sue. Oh, well, I love you, gal. And I want you, Peggy Sue. Oh, well, I love you, gal. And I want you.
Did your musical obsessions come from there, kind of early rock and roll?
Yes, the birth of rock and roll. Elvis Presley lit the fire for me, and I feel like that birth of rock and roll had so much, like, tremendous power and potential, and it lasted for a while. And then I remember hearing that John Lennon said rock and roll died when Elvis went in the army. And it's sort of true in a way. Mm. It changed. There are a lot of great music, but there's this thing that rock and roll had in that very beginning that kind of went away.
Something just got lost.
A little bit.
What's your Elvis track? What should we play? What's the Elvis song we should play for you?
I guess, Baby, What You Want Me to Do.
Thank you.
what you want me to do.
Do you remember the first time you went to a movie, went to the cinema and kind of heard a soundtrack or a song in a film that really made an impression on you?
Yeah, it was Summer Place.
I don't know that.
Theme from the Summer Place. I'll tell you what it was. It was a kind of a terrible film, but I took my girlfriend to it, and that made it, you know, a nice film, but it was an example of how music bumps up when it's hooked to images.
And you realize the kind of potential of that very early on in your sort of...
Yeah, that was kind of an eye-opener or ear-opener.
Because on the soundtrack you created with Alan Splett for your very first feature film, For Eraserhead, which was re-released, I think, last year, it's kind of become something as a standalone entity in its own right. People are almost as fascinated by the soundtrack to that film as the film itself, especially the song In Heaven. Why do you think that is?
Sound is so important. I always say cinema is sound and picture flowing together in time, and sound... can do so much for the picture. It's just an incredible thing. It can paint a great giant world, you know, beyond the picture, and it can set a mood. It can start dreams going, and it's so beautiful, but the sounds are usually dictated by the ideas in the picture, so you have to work to get the sounds to marry to the picture.
In heaven, everything is fine. In heaven, everything is fine. In heaven, everything is fine. You
yeah.
You're listening to The First Time with me, Matt Everett, and my guest, David Lynch. And that was In Heaven, taken from David Lynch's first film, Eraserhead, in 1977. First the version for the soundtrack, and then a cover version done by the Pixies. Lynch would have major success with his film The Elephant Man in 1980, but it was 1986's stunning Blue Velvet that would really establish him as a truly original filmmaker. I think you said that the actual idea for Blue Velvet, the initial mood of the film, came from hearing Bobby Vinton's version of that song. Is that right?
That's right. And I also say I didn't really like that song when it came out.
Really?
No, it was a kind of schmaltzy thing. And then some years went by, I heard it somewhere, and as I was listening, these images came. So it became a super important song to me.
What were the images that came? Can you remember?
Oh, yeah. Red lips through a glass of a front door glass of a car at night. Green lawns at night going off into darkness. And a mood that came with those two things, some kind of mystery. The ear came a little bit later, but those two things came from the song.
She wore blue velvet, bluer than velvet was the night, softer than satin was the light from the stars. She wore blue eyes, warmer than May, her tender sighs. Love was ours, ours, love I held tightly, feeling the rapture grow. Gone was the glow of blue velvet, whoa, whoa. But in my heart there'll always be, whoa, 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 precious and warm a memory through the years, and I still can see blue velvet. Precious and warm a memory through the years, and I still can see blue velvet through my tears. The
first thing that you see at the start of your film Lost Highway is this long highway, and the first thing you hear is the David Bowie track I'm Deranged, which is like a really rare Bowie track. Are you a big fan of his?
Yes, but you know that track, I listened to his whole album, and that track just stuck out to me. And when I talked to him about using it, he said, you know, that's strange because I really love that track. And you know, on every album I'm sure there's tracks that the artists, you know, the producers, they love, but for some reason just kind of gets lost through the years. It's not, but when you really focus in on some of these things, They're great, great. They could have been big.
Yeah. Because you work with him on Fire Walk With Me as well. What's he like? Because I'm an enormous Bowie fan.
He is a great person. And I worked with him on Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me. Really great to work with. Easygoing and very refined, dignified, and just totally professional.
Is there a Bowie track that we should play at this juncture?
I'm Deranged.
I'll play that one then.
Yeah, that would be great. Flying Down the Highway, Night.
Funny how secrets travel on. I start to believe if I were to bleed. Pink sky, the man changes his hands held high. The cruise me yard, cruise me bay. A blonde leaf beyond, beyond, beyond. No return, no return.
BBC Sounds.
Thank you.
I'm Matt Everett, and this is The First Time, the show where we look at the key first moments in an artist's career. And my guest this week is David Lynch, and that is Laura Palmer's theme from Lynch's groundbreaking television series Twin Peaks, music written for the show by Angelo Badalamenti. Lynch has contributed musically to most of his films, either as a lyricist, composer, or performer, and for Twin Peaks he wrote the words to Falling, the song sung by Julie Cruise that would become the show's main theme and an unlikely hit single. I asked him how he feels when he hears that song nowadays.
Oh no, it makes me feel so good. And there's another example. You know, that song was done, and I told Angelo that's going to be the theme for, you know, this show. And he didn't really get it, but when the beginning of Twin Peaks comes on with that music of Angelo's, it gives a feeling that is, you know, to me, and so beautiful, and it catches a kind of a thing of Twin Peaks.
It is strange that, like, some songs, some pieces of music kind of have a life outside the place they're originally intended to. Certain, you know, tracks kind of belong to everybody, and that song, I think, has become one of those. It kind of means so much to people, which is, that's quite a flattering thing, isn't it, when it happens, I guess?
Yeah, I think that's the thing. It becomes married to a story, to a world, and so the song becomes bigger.
Don't let yourself be hurt this time.
You recorded with Danger Mouse and Mark Linkous from Sparkle Horse as well, didn't you, on the Dark Night of the Soul album, on a couple of songs, including Star Eyes, which is just a beautiful track. And looking at some of your interviews and the way you talk about music, collaborations seem to be really at the heart of your musical creativity. How come you ended up working with those guys? Do you seek people out that you think you can bounce off?
Someone told me Danger Mouse wants to come to your house. And I didn't have a clue, but there were two songs out at that time, Ghost of Love and maybe Imaginary Girl, I'm not sure what. And I thought in the back of my mind, does he want me to sing on something? That can't be. But he didn't want me to sing. He wanted me to listen to the tracks, get ideas, have images come from listening to these tracks, and make stills. Instead of a video, make stills.
Right.
And then at the end of the time we spent in him telling me about that, I said, I just had this crazy idea that you wanted me to sing. And he said, I do want you to sing. So that, I'm sure he really didn't, but he was being very polite.
Being polite.
But I ended up doing two songs on that and meeting Sparkle Horse was really, both of them were just great to be around.
Listening to The First Time with me, Matt Everett, and my guest this week, David Lynch. As well as his work as a director and writer, David has recorded albums under his own name. The first was the very odd Blue Bob in 2001, and more recently he's released two albums with producer and musician Dean Hurley. The first, Crazy Clown Time in 2011, and then this year's The Big Dream. I asked him when he first started work on that record.
it segued from, we finished enough for Crazy Clown Time, but we were still working, so it wasn't any kind of break.
Oh, we just went straight through.
We just were working.
I think you called it electronic blues. There's definitely a kind of blues feel to it in places.
Always, we say, you know, the basis of that, what we're doing right now anyway, is based on the blues.
Why is that?
Just something we both love.
Because there's a Bob Dylan, actually, well, there's a Bob Dylan cover, but you said it's a cover, not of Bob Dylan, it's a cover of Nina Simone doing the covers. That's right?
Exactly right.
Why that song? Why did you choose it?
Big Dean Hurley had the idea that would be good to try to do that song, and I didn't get really pumped about it, but I got more and more in love with it, and it's a great song, it's a great story, and it's still a timely story.
Yeah, I mean, do you look, as, you know, someone who has a history in filmmaking, are you more attracted to songs and lyrics that have a strong narrative in them rather than the more abstract ones?
I like both, but I do like a kind of a story, even if it's a short story or an abstract story. Mm. I, you know, can picture things and picture a lot of times a character that helps me sing a certain way.
Okay, so what would be an example on this album then?
Sun Can't Be Seen No More.
Who's the character? What are they like?
Character is this young kid coming up from Memphis to cut a track in L.A. And he's not exact. He might live in a bigger town, and you know, but he's from the Piney Woods,
right?
And drives a pickup truck and lives that kind of life.
Interesting. You've got the details of the characters.
I mean, he's got a certain number of fillings in his mouth. Bad dentists.
Down in Memphis, they got a lot of pretty girls in the studio. That sure helps with the mood. You got me a beer? All right. Let's do it. Fast to
Beer. You've done more and more music in previous years. I guess people must ask you this a lot. I mean, do you see yourself as much a musician as a filmmaker? But I guess, you know, I guess for you it's just all art. It's just whatever you're doing at the moment. Is that right?
Yeah, the ideas take you to different places. So I'm involved in a lot of different things, and I'm in love with a lot of different mediums. And it's like these mediums are very, very beautiful women.
And you think it would be unjust and a waste if you just concentrated on just the one woman.
Well, yeah, you know, the others would feel pretty bad.
This album, and indeed your photographs and your films and your vines and your tweets and everything, are kind of often described as being Lynchian, which kind of fascinates me when anyone becomes an Ian, if you know what I mean. I kind of wanted to know what David Lynch thinks being Lynchian means. What does it mean to you?
I got this answer. I used the doctors have asked me not to think about this type of thing.
Is that your standard set response to that question?
It is now, yeah.
So what's next for you? I mean, if you recorded straight through for the past two albums, are you still working musically? What's next?
Well, Dean and I have really taken a break. There's other projects going on right now, but I know that when the dust settles on The Big Dream, we'll be back at it. And we do have some kind of ideas floating around that will inspire us to get back to work.
What kind of ideas? What can you tell us?
I don't know. They're top secret, Matt.
Something we always do is we ask the guest to pick the final song. So it can be anything you want. It can be something new, something old, something off this record, or something you heard this morning. And that's the song we'll finish on. What should we play out with?
Love and War by Neil Young.
Why that song?
Because it's one of the most beautiful songs I've ever heard.
Can you remember first hearing Neil and kind of falling in love with him straight away?
Well, I always liked him, but this is off the album he did called Le Noise with Daniel Lanois. And Neil's voice, this song, the way he sings it and the way he plays it is extraordinary to me. It's so beautiful. And his guitar work and the voice and the mood that comes out and the feeling it gives is something I think is extremely special.
Well, then that's the song we should play. Thank you very much. It's been really good to speak to you. Thanks for your time.
Matt, it's been great to talk to you, and we appreciate this interview. Thank you very much. Good day today.
When I sing about love and war, I don't really know what I'm saying. I've been in love and I've seen a lot of war, seen a lot of people praying. They pray to Allah and they pray to the Lord, and mostly they pray about love and war. Pray about love and war. Pray about love and war. Seen a lot of young men go to war and leave a lot of young brides waiting. I watched them try to explain it to their kids. Seen a lot of them failing. They tried to tell them and they tried to explain why daddy won't ever come home again. lot of things that I can't take back, but I don't really know if I wanna. And songs about love, I sang songs about war since the back streets of Toronto. I sang for justice and I hit a bad chord, but I still try to sing about love and war. Break the heart of your lover. I made a mistake and I did it again. Then we struggled to recover. I sang in anger, hit another bad chord, but I still try to sing about love and war.
This is Radio 2 on the BBC Sounds app, on your smart speaker and on 88 to 91 FM.
BBC News at 3 o'clock. This is Victoria Bourne. Boris Johnson is to launch a task force to speed up the delivery of vital infrastructure projects as part of government plans to help the economy recover from the coronavirus pandemic. Downing Street says the Prime Minister will set out details in a major speech on Tuesday. Here's our political correspondent, Jessica Parker.
With a new task force called Project Speed, Downing Street is promising dramatic acceleration in delivering new schools, hospitals and transport schemes. Speaking to the Mail on Sunday ahead of a speech on Tuesday, the Prime Minister pledges to double down on tackling inequality, the so-called levelling up agenda. As ministers emphasise speed, Labour has again accused the government of being slow to act on tackling COVID-19. The party wants changes to the furlough scheme, saying up to a million jobs are at risk.
A man has been charged with the murder of three men who were stabbed to death in a park in Reading last weekend. Kairi Sedilla, who's 25, is due to appear before magistrates tomorrow. The man shot dead by police following a knife attack which injured six people in Glasgow on Friday has been named as Badreddin Abdullah Adam. He was 28 and from Sudan. The six victims are being treated in hospital. Latest figures show more than 2.5 million people have now tested positive for coronavirus in the US. Three states, Florida, Arizona and Nevada, have reported record daily highs for new infections. The mayor of Miami, Francis Suarez, says concerns that hospitals will be overrun are growing.
The sheer numbers are so high that if they continue to go up, they're going to continue to stress our medical care system, which they are doing right now. We still have sufficient capacity, but we definitely are more stressed as a healthcare system than we were just a couple of weeks ago.
President Trump has been threatened with legal action if he continues to use songs by the Rolling Stones at his rallies. The band's lawyers are working with the performing rights organization, the BMI, to try to stop the unauthorized use of their music. James Shippen reports.
Thank you, Oklahoma. Thank you.
It's a familiar scene. Donald Trump finishes a speech, and You Can't Always Get What You Want by the Rolling Stones starts playing over the public address system. But perhaps not for much longer. The BMI has warned the Trump campaign that the president could be sued for breaching a licensing agreement if he refuses to stop using the music without permission. However, it's not clear how effective the threat will be. The Stones have raised objections before during the 2016 election, and Mr. Trump has ignored previous cease and desist letters.
Police have used dispersal powers to clear two unlicensed music events in South London. Scotland Yard said they'd caused significant disruption. BBC News at 3 minutes.